Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants is one of Mormonism's most important revelations, the New and Everlasting Covenant of Marriage. But does it allow for gay marriage? Dr. Bill Smith will answer that question in just a moment. We'll also talk about how Section 132 affects another hot topic in Mormonism, women in priesthood. Check out our conversation. Before you do that, I just want to mention a couple of other things. Number one, I really appreciate all the comments we're getting on YouTube. However, some people can be a little disrespectful. We want to make this a very respectful place. Please, no cussing, swearing, but especially no denigrating church leaders or calling someone else an apostate or anything like that. I've had both of those things happen on there, and I'm going to delete comments that are disrespectful. So feel free to express strong opinions, back up your assertions. Those things are welcome, but denigrating others, either other commenters or church leaders or anything like that, is not appreciated and will be deleted. So we want to keep this place a respectful forum. We want to have people that may be critical of the church and people that are for the church to interact together and to feel comfortable. And so please be respectful in all of your comments. Have a strong opinion, that's perfectly fine. Just be respectful when you do so. Now back to our conversation. You mentioned a couple of things that were very interesting to me, especially in light of the family proclamation. DNC 132 is the kind of foundation of forever families. But you mentioned singles, and you also mentioned gays. And how do those relate to Section 132?
Well, I think that Section 132 is, by evidence, at least by internal evidence, it's very much in the vein of thinking of sex as being in terms of heterosexual sex. Of course, not necessarily one man, one woman sex, but one man, maybe multiple women. So I think that's the point of the revelation. It doesn't really speak to the possibility of gay marriage. It doesn't open that possibility at all. Whether that could be addressed in some other way, I don't know, but the revelation doesn't, that's not on anybody's mind.
Right. So, I mean, do you see that as being a possibility of a future revelation?
Anything's possible. I don't know. Whether people would feel that there was some kind of dissonance with Section 132 and any further revelation that expanded, say, some kind of approval of gay relationships, gay marriage, I don't know. That's for another generation, I'm guessing. But yeah, that might be maybe something that would be addressed. I don't know. Just hypothetically, if there were a change in that direction, I would imagine that it would be approached in, I'm just guessing, but I imagine it would be approached in some way, the same way that we approach the priesthood ban, the temple ban. That's all gone. That's over with. We're not talking about it anymore.
Yeah. So official declaration 3. So, I mean, do you see that as really a realistic possibility? Because it sure seems like, well, and I don't know, maybe I was too young really to know what it was like in the 70s. You know, I do remember when 1978, when President Kimball announced the revelation. I mean, I got to tell you, I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and I remember when I heard the announcement, I was like, blacks couldn't hold the priesthood? I didn't know that. I don't think, you know, I've got some young children that are about that age. So if such a thing were to happen, say in April at General Conference, I'm pretty certain my kids would be very well aware that we don't support gay marriage. So this would be really out of left field.
Yeah, we've been very public about that, in contrast to how we thought about or publicly discussed the priesthood ban, the temple ban. Especially in the 1960s, 1970s, it didn't appear too at all, really, I don't think, in general meetings. It just wasn't a topic of discussion. I could be corrected on that, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, do you see that as a realistic, an official Declaration 3 saying that gay marriage would be legal? Or not legal, not against our principles? Or I don't know.
Well, there's an equally, something of equal probability, I think, is that we have an official declaration that says that women can be ordained. So, yeah.
Would that be more likely?
Boy, I don't really know. But I think yes, it probably fits better with the current paradigm than, say, gay marriage would.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Recognize gay marriage. You know, whether that's going to happen sooner or later, I don't know. My personal opinion is that just looking at the history of the way Latter-day Saints have integrated with culture, cultural norms, we have tended to do that. Usually slowly and in our own way. So I don't discount the possibilities of those things happening, just based on history. How it might happen or how it might be realized, I have no idea.
So do you see, because we kind of started talking about with 132, do you see 132 being compatible with, say, female ordination?
Yeah, the polygamy parts seem to partake of the typical sort of patriarchal kinds of views of the 19th century, the 18th century, and back. So in terms of incompatibilities, that's where that would lie. But in terms of ordination practices, those kinds of things, I don't see an incompatibility there. Structure. I mean, it would be easy to enfold women into priesthood structures if that was to take place. I don't see a problem there, and I don't think it would be possible to stop that because you had the same kinds of issues with blacks in the priesthood when the 78 change was announced. They were very clear that this meant that the you know, there weren't any restrictions on their participation in any way. I mean, you could make black bishops, you could make black stake presidents, general authorities, you could make, you can send anybody to the temple. No bar on that now. And I'm guessing that the same thing would happen if, say, women were to receive ordination, that there would be no restriction. I don't think you could legitimately say, okay, you women can do priesthood ordinances on women now, but not men, or vice versa. So yeah, it would be a kind of universal priesthood, sort of a biblical kind of priesthood, really of all believers sort of idea. That's how I think it would have to unfold. But of course, I could be wrong.
Oh yeah, well certainly. We kind of have the community of Christ as a little bit of a model.
Right.
Would you, if there were an official Declaration 3, would you see us kind of following a similar model? Because
I'm guessing that it would be full participation. Yeah, it would be. It would take us time, I think, because we've seen that it takes time. For example, for other cultures to make their way into high leadership positions in the church, in the LDS church. We don't have any black apostles. We don't have any. We have had a few black general authorities, but none in the, you know, in the top levels. And so that, I'm guessing that sort of thing might take time, but man, it's really a speculative operation. I don't know.
Well, you know, and I know the community of Christ, it seems like they've integrated. They have a black apostle. I know that one-third of the first presidency is female. And
right.
I believe one-third of the apostles are as well female. But, you know, and they, in 1984 was when they allowed women to hold the priesthood. 1978, we still don't have a black apostle in the LDS Church.
Yeah, I think what happened with the Community of Christ is really illustrative of some of the fears that exist about schism, because there were, you know, these restoration branches that sort of said, we're going our own way. We're not going to be part of these changes. the change from a, you know, a DNA descendant of Joseph Smith being the president of their church, that was a big change for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to unfold in their conception of what they were. And I think women priesthood, gay marriage kinds of things might be somewhat similar in the LDS Church, because we've argued very strongly about gay marriage. We've put these policies in place about gay marriage, that you know, the children of gay married people can't be baptized. The those kinds of things. So we have rigid. We've set some rigid boundaries there. And decloaking a kind of gay marriage approval thing would be a significant thing. I don't know where that would go or what people would think about it. I can imagine internal discussions about it, but I suspect it would be, they'd go something like this, something like the internal discussions about blacks and the priesthood in, say, 1907.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things, as I said, especially since you mentioned, you know, we're still in February, it's still Black History Month, is I know there's been several, a lot more than I realized, black people that were ordained accidentally. There was a funny story. I was at the Mormon History Association a couple of years ago, and I don't remember where it was, but they talked about a black man, I want to say in Panama or somewhere in Central America, and he said he wanted to get ordained. Or he's like, why haven't I been ordained? And they said, well, you're black. And he went home and talked to his mom, and she said, you're not black. And he said, so he went back to the bishop and he said, my mom said I'm not black. And they said, okay, well, we'll ordain you. And I just was like, really? That's like a real true story? But there have been, you know, a better example, I guess, is somebody serving as a bishop and then found out that they had a great grandparent that was black or something, and so they were quietly released and told, well, don't do any more, you know, blessings or ordinations or anything. Just don't do it. You know, as we look at with the gays, there's lots of people, and we've openly ordained people as long as they live the law of chastity as we currently believe. And so there's a lot of gay men, I guess, not women, but a lot of gay men that have been ordained to the priesthood. And so there's a lot of similarities I actually see with these blacks that were actually ordained accidentally, you know, quote unquote accidentally. So I just see this as such a big problem. I don't know how you get around that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I don't know whether our liturgy speaks very clearly to something like that. There are historical incidents of things like you say. People sort of have, in sort of violation of policy of the time, things have happened. But I don't know if our ritual liturgy speaks to those kinds of questions very clearly.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Bill Smith. In our next conversation, Dr. Smith will talk a little bit about how editing of Revelations was routinely done, not just by Joseph Smith, but by other church leaders as well.
I mean, they just didn't take them as they were. They changed and corrected all, and not just Joseph Smith, but other people who worked in the committee, changed things, made them more apparent, slid the theology maybe a little bit this way or that way. There was very little punctuation, say, when the revelations were dictated. You had to insert that kind of thing. That can induce meanings mm-hmm. on things, whether they're intended or not.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.